So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have SAP's Jamie Anderson. Hi, Jamie.
Hi there, Adrian. How are you doing?
I'm very well, sir. So, Jamie, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and also a bit about the work that you do?
Yeah, sure, of course, Adrian. Well, I run global product marketing for SAP Custom Engagement Solutions business. So that covers the typical solutions you would associate with CRM and e-commerce. So we're talking solutions for sales, marketing, service, and commerce.
Uh-huh.
And I've worked in this business now for slightly over 18 years. It's quite frightening.
Right.
I started actually as a programmer, building the systems, and then I went into implementing systems on client sites, working with clients to develop way back, in the days of contact centers and your contact centers and so on. And I eventually then ended up in marketing,
right,
which seems like a really good place for me to be.
Excellent. So, Jamie, we were talking earlier about, something that I see quite a lot, and it's the sort of the disconnect between what sometimes, say, the market, i.e. customers say, and also kind of what gets delivered. And you mentioned something called brand self-awareness, which I thought was a really nice concept. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think the first time I ever really noticed this, Adrian, was a way back when social media was kind of becoming a lot more mainstream.
Uh-huh.
And brands at the time really wanted to take advantage of this. Is, we need to get on social media. We need to have a presence on Facebook. We need to have a presence on Twitter. And we need to just be out there telling people how wonderful we are.
Yeah.
And when I spoke about the brand self-awareness, what I realised very quickly, because I worked with a lot of banks at the time, and what I realised really quickly was that banks were not massively clued into the fact that customers largely hated them. so they were creating Facebook and Twitter pages saying, hey, we're here, and get this product, get that one. And then people would just start responding saying, we hate you. Did you know that, you overcharged me last month? It's disgraceful. I'm a student, and every time I go into overdraft, and then I remember there was a huge kind of furore about, it was one of the big banks, I'm not going to name it, that would be unfair, but a lot of people know the story.
Yeah.
One of the big banks in the UK that was doing that, and what happened was a complete pressure group erupted on Facebook.
Right.
And it was basically anti this bank, and it had hundreds of thousands of likes, more likes than the bank had themselves, and there was people saying, I wish there was a dislike button on Facebook for your page. So there's all this. So when you talk about the brand self-awareness, I think that there's an amazing opportunity with things like social media to understand the market that you're in, the purpose that you serve your customers, beyond some mission statement and requirement to just sell to people that you may have as a company.
Yeah.
And there's been some great cases. You mentioned a couple of cases, I think, the last time we spoke.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't just permeate the social world. Social is a great barometer if you listen effectively.
Yeah.
Social is a great way to find out what people really think before you open your big gob and put both your feet in it, as a couple of brands notably were speaking about last week did. And I think that's a key thing. I think social gives us this amazing opportunity for self-awareness.
Yeah. I think there's also another thing you said, and you quote, and I really wanted to get this on the record as well,
right,
or record it, is like the connection with Robert Burns as well, because you talked about this poem, To a Louse. And I wonder if you would quote that on air, as it were.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm driving, so I'm doing my very best with this one at the moment. But it was, oh, what some power the gifty gears, the seer sells as other seers. Now, you're going to enjoy that. It's taking you right back. But basically, the message is, it's a poem from the 1700s, right?
Yeah.
And what I loved about it, and we were talking about that self-awareness, what I loved about that poem is it encapsulates it 300 years before. And basically, he was saying the greatest gift that can be given to you is to actually see yourselves as others see you.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Now we're sitting in the midst of, technological capability to really look at ourselves through the lens of others.
Yes.
And say, you know, what is our relevance? You know, what is it we stand for? What can we do to make things better for, you know, our customers?
Yeah.
I think it's a great opportunity.
Fantastic. So, I mean, a lot of people will frame that and talk about it in terms of sort of customer engagement, and that's something that you're right in the heart of kind of right now. I mean, what in your experience does that mean, and what sort of things have you seen do the best firms do to sort of get it right, as it were?
Wow, I mean...
That's a big question, I know that's a big question.
No, I think it all starts with listening and understanding whatever problem or... Not just problem, but what it is the customers are looking for. I'll actually give you an example. You know, there's a transit company, right, based in North America called STM, right?
Yeah.
Based in Montreal. It's the Société de Transport de Montreal.
Yeah.
And they were trying to increase ridership, right?
Right.
Get people to feel confident using public services, you know, the bus, train, the tube, whatever. And they tried multiple things in the past. And they created a loyalty card and all this type of stuff. But you probably have one in out to London, you know, agents. You know your Oyster card and
all that type
of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the thing that the one thing they hooked into, there's a number of reasons why they wanted to do it, right? Because they want to stop congestion building in the inner city. That's number one.
Uh-huh.
They want to encourage much more green, you know, kind of modes of travel.
Yeah.
So the more people that use public transport, obviously it's greener, it's cleaner, you know, from an environment perspective, you know. And they also wanted to find a way that if people were riding, you know, the transit, how they could take advantage of much more of the, you know, the public amenities as well.
Uh-huh.
So promoting restaurants, promoting, you know, theatre, you know, opera, all that type of thing. And the guy behind it, the CMO, Pierre Bourbonnier, he did a brilliant thing. He sort of looked at the whole thing and he said, if you want to increase people's confidence, first of all, because it's all about confidence, right, in public transport, the number thing you need to deliver them is reliable information.
Mm-hmm.
So they created an app, right,
mm-hmm.
which was a combination of the person's loyalty card,
mm-hmm.
right, so it knew who the person was, and it enabled the person to put some rudimentary details in about, you know, where they live, what transit they take, the journey they typically take, and then the app was able to provide them with relevant information.
Right.
And that literally increased people's confidence because they weren't having to go to the train station or the bus station to see that if there was a problem or there's congestion or whatever. And it started to say things like, hey, you know what, this transit's been delayed. Why don't you, you know, take this coupon and get 20% off a coffee here,
mm-hmm.
and promote a local business at the same time? And over time, as people became comfortable with it, and this is the beauty of customer engagement, as people's confidence built
mm-hmm.
in the service, they used the service more. And what they also did was they shared more information.
Yeah.
Because there was a dual value. There was value out for the information that you put in, which I thought was brilliant. It's actually real co-value creation. You know, you hear people talk about that. So literally, this app, I think it's the most downloaded app in the App Store for that, you know, around that area. And then, you know, they've created commerce in the inner city. They've actually been able to help the local firms that sign up to be part of the platform to market effectively based on permission-based marketing. Somebody might say, I like the opera, I like red wine, you know, I like this type of food. So restaurants get all this information, and, you know, the facilities get this information to be able to target offers to customers.
Yeah.
It's been terrific. That's a great case of someone looking at the problem from the outside in,
yeah.
and not looking at it from the perspective of what can we do to our customers. They're saying, what do our customers need? And I think that's a great place to start. It's probably quite a long-winded one, but I wanted to give you an example.
No, I think that's
of looking from the outside in.
I think that's absolutely right, and it reminds me of a quote from a great marketeer by a guy by the name of Theodore Levitt, who said, people don't buy drills, they buy quarter-inch holes.
Yes, I've never heard that one before. I've heard of Theodore Levitt, but I like that one. I'm probably going to steal it, you know now.
No, that's fine. Don't you worry. It's just, because I think what's interesting about that, I mean, also about the thing that the example that you gave is that I think the challenge is to realize that in large part many customers don't necessarily care about the nuts and bolts of the product and service and things, but they care about what they get out of it. And that goes back to your example and the Theodore Levitt sort of saying, is that, and I think that's where many firms fall down, is that they still focus on the features and benefits and everything else rather than actually what does the customer get from the use of their product and service, or what is it they're trying to achieve. And if you miss that, if you don't focus on that, then you can be on a hiding to nothing sometimes.
Well, I think that there is something that is like a little addendum to this, you know, as you were talking there. And I was thinking about what is the beauty of that little app, right?
Yeah.
That little app is connecting people, right?
Uh-huh.
It's not, some people could say it's a customer engagement, it's CRM, it's all this type of thing. It's actually just connecting people to other people, to services, you know, and it's simple. It's very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, you know, companies use their own complexity and, you know, the internal processes and everything that they've got as a kind of shield. You know, they kind of use them and ask customers to comply with the way they do business. And that's just not the way it works anymore.
Yes.
The most successful companies are going to be the ones that simplify the process for the customer.
Yeah.
They're going to be the ones that are easy to do business. And I see this more and more come into it. And our CEO, Bill McDermott, talks a lot about the biggest enemy for the enterprise is complexity.
Yes.
And you need to rethink everything you do from the outside in and work to reducing that complexity in your business. It's simple. It's what wins every single time.
Absolutely. So, Jamie, based on kind of what you were, you know, where you're saying, that leads me on to my next sort of question, which was thinking about, well, if firms are having to try and strive for simplicity in the face of complexity. I mean, many people talk about people, process, or technology. I mean, you know, where should they, and that's the root of where how they deliver a great customer service or experience. Where should they start with all that? Is it process? Is it people? Is it technology?
I've talked a lot about people, process, technology in the context of, you know, CRM and customer experience, customer engagement for a long time.
Yeah.
I think the first thing, again, is you think, we've spoken about it already, think about what it is that you do to make things better for your customers. So think from the customer end first, right?
Uh-huh.
Then the second thing, and this is absolutely critical, second thing you think is, okay, how do I enable my employees to engage these customers? You know, how do I simplify it for them so that it's not difficult for them?
Right.
And technology comes in at that point.
Right.
Right. I think you need to be customer focused. You need to be completely engage your employees. You need to empower your employees to do the job they need to do to make that thing easy.
Yeah.
And then you need to build the technology to support those things, not the other way around, because for too long, things like CRM have been built to serve the need to collect information.
Yes.
If you look at, you know, what the foundation of CRM systems has been for a long time, Adrian, and I know you've looked at this in the past.
Uh-huh.
They literally, it's been almost like a customer information data store.
Yes.
But why am I collecting this information about this? Why am I asking the customer these particular questions? Because I'm forcing them to comply with a process requirement that I have. And sometimes I'm asking them the same question multiple times. Sometimes I'm forcing them to re-verify information across different channels and so on. It becomes massively complex because your employees are slaves to the system.
Yes.
And the customer is inconvenienced, and the process is much more complex because you're forcing them to comply with something you've built to support technology.
Mm-hmm.
Not the other way around. The technology's not been built to support your business or your employees.
Yeah.
And that's the big change that we have now.
Excellent. And so do you, I mean, could you give me an example of, say, somebody that you guys have worked with that you think these guys have totally got it right? They are doing some great things and leading kind of their market because they're doing almost exactly what you're suggesting that they're doing, without giving away any sort of like secrets, obviously.
Sure. Well, look, there are a number of customers, you know, that we've worked with. The one that always, trying to think of the one, because there's a few I could talk about. The one that I like to talk about, because one of the biggest complexities that in business today is exacerbated by things like social,
yeah,
and the internet, and the contact center, and the store experience, and the one-to-one business sales rep, right?
Yeah.
That's channels. Those are all channels.
Yes.
And solving what some people call the omni-channel problem or the multi-channel problem or whatever it is,
uh-huh,
you know, that is massive organizational complexity. And there's one of our customers, Nespresso, has done an amazing job of solving that, you know, particular issue by ensuring that, you know, the experience, they've gone experience, customer experience led effectively.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you order off the internet, in fact, I don't know if you're an Nespresso customer, maybe you shouldn't declare it on the call, but seriously, go and get, I really love Nespresso, I love the products, they're beautiful as well,
my mum and dad are Nespresso sort of like fans, and my mum's always asking me if I want to an Nespresso sort of machine for Christmas and things, so yeah, I know all about it.
Well, if you mum, so next time you're with your mum, you should go into one of the concessions,
uh-huh,
in London, right, because there's a big one in one of the big shops in London. I'm not going to give them an advert.
No, sure, that's fair.
You go into one of the concessions. Now your mum will probably order the capsules out of the call centre. She maybe goes online and reorders the capsules. She maybe tries different capsules. Now, I had a friend that does all this, and he went in the store and he said to me that. And he phoned me and he said, you guys work in Nespresso, don't you? I said, yeah. He said, that's an amazing experience. I went in the store in London. I told them, you know, like I was looking for something, you know, a bit different. I couldn't remember what the capsules were that I ordered.
Yeah.
And they were able to, in the store, look at my complete order history and say, well, kind of like, you know, the dark Italian roast stuff, so we would suggest you try this. And he went, wow. Because what they've done was they've fused the physical and the digital experience, and because the employees were knowledgeable, engaged, and able to offer advice, the overall experience, you've got people process technology, is a perfect example of all working in harmony.
Yeah.
Supported by the system, not because the system is driving it,
yes,
which I thought was fantastic.
Excellent. Now, that's a really good example. So, is there anything else that top tips that you would suggest before we sort of like wrap up sort of here? I mean, is that what are the sort of big things that you say, if I want people to take away a couple of things from this call, it would be this and this. What would that be?
I would say number one thing is customer engagement is not CRM.
Right.
As it stands today, I mean, look, I've sometimes been described as a CRM purist. I might have called myself that once recently, right? I don't know why, but I just did. And what I meant when I said it was that I've been involved with CRM since its inception, since it was more a business philosophy than a technology.
Yes.
And way back then, as a business philosophy, you know, it was fantastic. Who doesn't want to manage the relationships better with their customers? But CRM technology has kind of supplanted what CRM means to people now.
Yeah.
It's almost become relegated to a back office technology. As I said, a customer information data store. Plus, I think the notion that you manage relationships with customers and you're in control, because management is about that.
Yeah.
You're not in control.
Mm-hmm.
You're in control of the information.
Yes.
Because you can choose where to say it, store it.
Yeah.
But you're not in control of the relationship. Increasingly, I say we've gone from CRM to CMR. We've moved from the world of customer relationship management to the customer managed relationship.
Right.
And that takes in all the channels through which a customer wants to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
It places them in the driving seat. Your job now in customer engagement is to make every customer journey memorable.
Yeah.
And make every customer journey seamless.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big takeaway that, you know, we're in a world now which is much bigger than CRM. There's much more technologies, you know, there's much more channels than traditionally we had. I genuinely think it's a very exciting time.
Mm.
But the ability of organisations now to react in the moment and live in the moment with their customers, that's the big challenge, and that's what customer engagement is all about.
Fantastic. So, Jamie, that brings me to my final question, and that is what would you like to shamelessly plug?
What would I like to say? Well, I'd obviously love to shamelessly plug our customer engagement solutions portfolio.
There you go.
You know, we've made tremendous strides, tremendous efforts, particularly as we see the cloud as a platform for innovation for our customers. You know, releasing new updates every 3 months, it's incredible. For me, that is, the cloud brings enormous innovation potential for businesses, and we'll help our customers certainly leverage all the benefits of that. So I'm looking forward to keeping that journey going.
Jamie, that's fantastic. I just want to say thank you for that. Thank you for your insights. Thank you for sharing a few stories for you. Thank you for the quote from Robbie Burns as well. I will make sure I get all that linked up and stuff. And it's been great talking to you today.
Oh, likewise. And thanks for considering me and asking me to participate. I do appreciate it, Adrian.
No problem, Jamie.